From coast to coast and all around the globe, Richie and John, truth telling's their code. News, laughs, and love with a righteous tone. Loud, proud, never alone. It's the Richie and John Show, lighting up the way. Voices for justice, bold every day. Hope in their hearts, mics in their hands. Together we rise and together we stand. Richie and John, let's go.
From the Mutual Broadcasting System's Queer News Network, this is the Richie and John Show. News, entertainment, and lifestyle talk for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community and its allies. Here are your very well-adjusted, happy, and openly fabulous masters of ceremonies, Richie Roy and John McMullen.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Richie and John. It is Newsday Tuesday. We've got lots of news that affects our community. That is the LGBTQ plus community. There's tons of other news going on in the world. There are things from alligator Alcatraz to, you know, the Democratic legislators in Texas literally fleeing the state to avoid a horrible gerrymandering vote. We have a lot of grotesqueness coming out of the White House. We have the word hotness showing up all the time now. They posted like a tweet saying like hotness back or something. And there was a Truth Social post from the current president that American Eagle has the hottest ad because Sidney Sweeney was in an ad that talked about having good genes. So eugenics are back, apparently, in 2025 from the current administration. So that's all the backdrop. We're not talking about any of that today because that's not stuff that directly is LGBTQ focused, but there's plenty we could. I mean, we could do Newsday Tuesday. We could do like Weeping Wednesday, where we just talk about all this other garbage shit that's happening. We're not going to do that, though. We're going to focus on our stuff. And of course, I'm here with my wonderful co-host, John McMullen, who is usually in even more of a fit of pique than I am. So, John, how are you?
Oh, joyous. Let me tell you, I'm thinking about trying to find another community that I can join because I'm just so sick and tired of the news that touches sort of on our community and sometimes touches dramatically on our community, and that it's just so effed up right now. You know, it's like, seriously, I just want to go on vacation from the world for like 2 months and pretend that, I don't know, we live on Earth too. I don't know.
2 months seems actually kind of wishful thinking. Two decades, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
Because the idiocracy of the timeline is wild to me. Seeing just the dumbest things coming out of course, this administration, but also the folks who kind of are, I mean, you know, RFK Jr. Just I think a couple days ago, there are a lot of studies that basically say vaccines are good, and RFK Jr. being like, yeah, those are kind of dumb. Actually, vaccines still are bad and we shouldn't do them. And then all of the whether they're bots or just idiots that are responding to me like, yeah, fuck those vaccines.
Listen, Bobby and Ethel should have just arranged to have an abortion with that one.
So in any case, it's been a week. It's been a wild ride. You know, just today I was talking with someone and they were like, oh, you know, it's only been, you know, so many months since this administration started. I was like, they were like 7 months or whatever. I was like, 7 months? You mean 7 years, right? Obviously, right. You mean years, because I've aged 7 years over these 7 months. In any case, we're doing our best. We're here with you on Newsday Tuesday. And John has a story for you about someone who is ostensibly a member of our community, although we disclaim him. We actually took him in a wicker basket and put him on the stoop of a fire department in Bethesda. And tell us about that, John.
Apparently, they gave him back to the American people. Yeah, Trump is leaving the door open to pardoning the disgraced ex-congressman George Santos.
Yeah.
Oh my God. In a recent interview with Newsmax, you know, another great bastion of journalism, Trump asked or was asked directly about granting clemency to several controversial figures, including Santos, who pleaded guilty last August to wire fraud and identity theft. Trump didn't rule out the idea of doing that. Instead, he offered this assessment. He lied like hell, I have to tell you. Before laughing, still, he noted, he was 100% for Trump. His vote was solid. And that's a long sentence. Santos is serving a 7-year term for admitting to schemes involving donor identity theft and misuse of campaign funds for personal luxuries. Well, of course he's going to pardon him, because how many times has he done that? It would be really hypocritical for him not to. Anyway, Trump added, nobody has talked to me about it, but with him, I have the right to do it. I'm so tired of hearing that line, too. I have the right to do it. He's talking about doing that with Ghislaine as well. Santos was expelled from Congress, of course, in 2023 following a scathing ethics investigation, and he now claims House Speaker Mike Johnson blocked his efforts to seek a pardon. Well, that might be one of the only things that I could agree with Mike Johnson on.
Yeah. So this, I mean,
scumbag trash.
You know, an enabler, the most Vichy of Vichy, you know, folks, just the sniveling nature in which he is undercutting his own authority to lay supine before one of the dumbest people ever sort of shat upon this planet.
You know what I hope happens? Hmm. I hope that somebody decides to do a biopic on him. And the person who absolutely must be cast as him is Stephen Colbert, because they look so much alike. And I just think that it would be such justice to have Colbert play the role of Mike Johnson.
I love that idea. I love that idea a lot. And, you know, this goes back to actually what I was thinking, because to that quote you said earlier, he was 100% for Trump. His vote was solid. And that's a long sentence. That phrase in a different context, hopefully maybe 5-10 years from now, means something very different, because when we have whatever, you know, trials, we end up having, hopefully, like Germany had after World War II, being 100% for Trump, having that vote being solid, and that being a long sentence. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this, the thing with the George Santos,
thinks that there's going to be another version of the Nuremberg trials. I'm not so sure, and I heard somebody arguing last night. I don't remember if it was on TV or elsewhere, but I heard somebody talking about the fact that that they didn't think that we'd ever get to that stage. I'd like to think that we could, because people do need to be held accountable for all of the disasters that are happening and the devastation to just millions of people's lives.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, the thing with this pardon is, and like you mentioned the whole Epstein thing. I mean, the only Ghislaine I care about is that alley behind the Abbey in West Hollywood. But, you know, I do think that...
I thought you were going to say that back room where we hung out at the Eagle in New York. But okay.
That too, yes. But no, it goes to the fact that, you know, again, it hasn't been that long since January 20th of this year, but that a lot of people, and specifically a lot of people in the legislature and a lot of people in power, including Republicans who previously at different times spoke pretty negatively about this current president as being uncouth, unfit for office, etc., are now just completely sitting on their hands at the most like banana republic, Pinochet, you know, garbage, third world, behavior of like the most tin pot autocrat possible. And they just are fine with it. They're like literally handing out favors, handing out contracts, selling off public lands to the highest bidder who's a friend. All of this stuff. They're fine with it. And meanwhile, you know, they literally spent, you know, would have congressional inquiries because Biden licked his ice cream the wrong way.
Absolutely. It's just un-freaking real.
So George Santos, you know, you might just be getting what you want. And, you know, you can go back to buying Hermes bags with other people's money. Good for you. So moving on, we will head to a different part of the federal government. And here we have the DOJ, which also, if you look at what's been happening recently, the DOJ, which for many, many, many decades was an august institution that was proudly separate from the presidency and held itself to high regard and was generally given a lot of latitude to be independent and truth-seeking and law-abiding. That's gone. I mean, I believe Jeanine Pirro was just ensconced as a U.S. attorney. I believe that happened today.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I've not been paying attention to the news close enough, I guess. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, that happened today. Yeah. The Senate confirmed Jeanine Pirro as the U.S. attorney for D.C., of all things, which is actually a U.S. attorney for D.C. is incredibly important in DOJ. But so DOJ, previously a very august institution, now literally run by like a sort of crazy know-nothing TV people. The DOJ has denied the gender identities of transgender service members in a new court filing, prompting outrage from plaintiffs and advocates. In its response to Talbot versus United States filed last Friday, the DOJ described trans women as, quote, males who identify as female and trans men as, quote, females who identify as male. The filing argues that plaintiffs, all active duty service members, are not entitled to legal relief. It's difficult for me to understand the defense's statement that I'm female, said lead plaintiff Nicholas Talbot, which contradicts all of my government documentation. The lawsuit challenges the Trump-era ban on trans military service, calling it arbitrary and discriminatory. DOJ maintains the policy is based on gender dysphoria diagnoses, not transgender identity. Legal Director Shannon Minter called the filing childish name-calling and accused the administration of trying to erase trans people while actively purging them from service.
Yeah, I really want us to get Shannon, who I think is one of the great heroes of the last quarter century in our community, on this program. He is an amazing, amazing person, was really... played a very important role in marriage equality and all that, but who has lived this experience in his life and done an amazing number of things while with the National Center for Lesbian Rights. I don't know. In a way, I'm just so tired of these stories because it's just a repetition of their hatred and their discrimination over and over and over again. It weakens my soul, how I feel generally as a human being with the way that we treat these people, and especially those who have served their nation honorably.
Yeah, it's just... The thing that's really striking about this one is that they're describing current active duty service members in this way, because, you know, I believe one of the nicknames is President Bone Spurs. Pete Hegseth, Deus Vult, White Power Pete Hegseth, whose only qualification for being in his position is being a sycophant and maybe and once throwing an axe on Fox morning show that missed its target and almost took someone out, like, you know, in the middle of Midtown, that these folks are directing the DOJ, again, run by a bunch of former TV talk show people, to discriminate against folks who actively signed up to protect the Constitution and this country, who are currently serving in that role, and who, until January 20th, the government, under at least the previous administration, gave sort of latitude to serve openly, and who did so without any issues. And this is, you know, in the kind of early days of these cases, the courts were like, what is the problem here? There's no issue with readiness or morale or any of that. But they continue with this in all regards. They are immiserating trans people and even current active duty service members, not to mention what they're doing with the VA. And again, you know, we've talked about this before, but the idea that the armed forces are pro this administration and that veterans are pro this administration, I don't understand why, if that is even true, because they don't care about service members. And if you think they don't care about trans ones, but they care about the other ones, good luck, because look at what they're doing to veterans' rights and the VA and everything else. So they don't give a shit about veterans or active duty service members at all. They never served. They don't care. They don't care about anyone, to be honest. Let's be clear. They don't care about anyone. But, you know, to the extent, and this has always been something that, for me, I'm a very Pacific person. Like, I'm extremely anti, you know, engagement. I'm really a pacifist. And so the military itself, I always have been ambivalent about, or had sort of, you know, complicated feelings about a military, you know, as someone who's very Pacific. But I can hold two things at the same time. And I can still think we shouldn't be a militaristic country, and still think that folks who, again, it's a volunteer military, and that people who sign up should be treated with dignity. And when you look at the 20th century as a grand experiment of actually bringing together people from all around the country, and actually people who are recent immigrants, putting them in the same place and treating them equally with equal dignity, has had a huge import on things like integration and recently queer acceptance, trans acceptance. And to see all of that kind of trying to be dismantled because, again, our current president and Pete Hegseth think that only, you know, people who look like Tom Cruise should be in the military is extremely disheartening.
Very. I got news for you. While there are a lot of good-looking people in our military, the majority of them, the vast majority of them, do not look like Tom Cruise.
And that's okay, you know?
It is okay.
Because I remember, you know, my dad was in the Air Force. And, you know, he talked about, you know, they'd call someone would be like Pepperoni or like Little Fatty or whatever. Like, you know, it's not all the Tom of Finland physique pictorial that maybe some of us might think it is or hope it is. But in any case, you know, that's that story. Just again, they're trying their best to make life miserable for as many people as they can who aren't white, straight men. And, you know, and the thing is, I read a little story, and I didn't really focus on it too much because I don't care about her very much. But it seems like Marjorie Taylor Greene has kind of, even her, has kind of made some rumblings that, like, the current Republican Party is not that great for women. And I'm like, hello.
I saw that too. And I was like, shut up.
I know. Yeah.
Like, you of all people, just shut up. Go away.
It's a little too late. They fitted you for your handmaid's wimple. So sorry. But in any case, yes. So, if you're not a straight white man, this administration has ideas of exactly how you should be subjugated. And this story just shows one example. But that said, we have good news out of the Senate. that has done a little bit of pushback. So, John, what did the Senate do?
Well, in a rare bipartisan rebuke, the Senate Appropriations Committee rejected the president's proposed budget cuts to life-saving HIV programs and medical research. On Thursday last week, the committee voted 26-3 to block plans to terminate CDC HIV prevention efforts and slash National Institutes of Health funding by 40%. Instead, senators advanced a measure to increase the NIH budget by $400 million. So, I mean, since he thinks in terms of millions and billions, fuck you, Donald Trump. Quote, the committee has heard from patients, families, and researchers about the importance of NIH funding, Senator Tammy Baldwin said. We've prioritized research that develops life-saving treatments. The committee also preserved funding for PrEP access and HIV programs under the Ending the HIV Epidemic Initiative and rejected plans to restructure how NIH supports universities and research centers. Quote, Congress has your back, said Senator Patty Murdy. We're not giving up the fight against cancer, Alzheimer's, or rare diseases, she said. Advocates say that the Senate's action brings much needed stability to HIV prevention nationwide.
Right. Very important. So this is a good story, obviously. Yep. It's not like 100%. It's a step. You know, increasing the NIH budget is a big deal. $400 million. That's great. And unfortunately, where the rubber will meet the road here is what happens next. Because what we've seen up until now under this administration is the NIH had appropriate, or the Congress had appropriated a lot of money for NIH grants. The administration, in contravention of the law, is just not spending it, is not approving or authorizing grants with the money that Congress specifically authorized to be spent. And no one is holding this administration accountable for. Yeah,
in one of the many situations where they have had RFK Jr. tongue-tied on a witness stand, he just can't seem to answer the questions about why he is not following Congress's dictate in spending resources that have been allocated already to these causes. And he just sounds like the freaking idiot that he is.
Well, he's an idiot, but he's also just, at the end of the day, not someone who, well, he doesn't care about any of this stuff. He doesn't believe in science, so it doesn't matter to him. But he's also not someone who, you know, would ever stand up to his boss to say we should spend the money. Because, again, this is not legal. When Congress appropriates money, it is supposed to be spent how Congress says it's supposed to be spent.
Right.
We're living, this is a rolling constitutional crisis. And so, yes, the senators advanced a measure to increase the NIH budget by $400 million. Will any of that or any of the other money that was already earmarked for NIH be spent? We don't know. And you know, the preserving of funding for PrEP access and HIV programs under that initiative, that is great. The NIH part, going back to that, is with the grants that are being sought, they have terminated NIH grants that have lots of different words in them. Words such as gay, lesbian, pregnant, woman, trans, you name it. And so the NIH budget may be increased by $400 million. None of that will be approved by this administration if it is research that touches upon any community, any population that hits any of those words. You know, again, diverse, underrepresented, you name it. And so, yeah, that money's just not going to get spent. Sadly, it's great. The Senate sort of said, fuck you, in a way, and this administration will just sit on it. So, good story for standing up, bad story because nothing will happen.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. And something that is also kind of blowing my mind is this next story, Richie. It's not usual that we would see members of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors or lawmakers there do things that would be contrary to our interest, but that seems to be the case.
Sure does. So get this. A gay San Francisco lawmaker is facing intense criticism after proposing to repeal one of the city's earliest LGBTQ civil rights victories. Supervisor Matt Dorsey has called the city's Equal Benefits Ordinance, passed in 1997, to require contractors to offer domestic partner benefits, quote, not defensible today, now that same-sex marriage is legal nationwide. Matt Dorsey said, quote, at some point, we have to question if it's worth the money, Dorsey said. LGBTQ leaders and activists are pushing back, warning that protections could still be needed. Former Supervisor Jeff Sheehy asked, why are we closing a door we may need? Tom Amiano, who authored the ordinance, called Dorsey's effort very disturbing, especially given the hate climate that exists today. Dorsey insists that he'd include a clause to restore the ordinance if marriage equality were ever overturned. Still, critics say repealing it now sends the wrong message at a time of rising threats to LGBTQ plus rights.
Absolutely. This blows me away. And I remember very clearly how all of this played out and why it played out the way that it did in San Francisco. You might remember that at the time, United Airlines was not on the good guy list.
Mm-hmm.
United had a practice of not providing their same gender partners of employees with benefits and fought it tooth and nail. And because they had a lease on a facility at San Francisco International Airport, which was a major kitchen for United on the West Coast to prepare meals for flights, that's what they did. They instituted that if you had a contract with the city of San Francisco, city or county of San Francisco, for something like that, that you had to offer those benefits. And they used it in a very manipulative and good way to force the hand of companies like United that were not on board yet with meeting the requirement to offer benefits. That's kind of, it was actually a huge issue between United and American Airlines at the time for competitive reasons because of the fact that they were screwing the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, I mean, it has a lot of historical importance and historical resonances. It also...
And why would you take and get rid of it at a time right now when there is such a clear and present threat to our equality being maintained?
Well, that's what's puzzling. But the thing is, it also, I think, and I haven't looked into who this Matt Dorsey character is.
He sounds like Robbie Starfuck.
He does. But it forgets something. And an important thing, which is even in 2025, we have gay marriage. There are folks in the queer community who, for very valid reasons, don't believe in marriage as a concept. And I don't think any of those people would say that gays who want to get married shouldn't get married. But for those reasons, don't want to engage in that practice. And this ordinance, which has been on the books for a long time and doesn't harm anyone, provides that option for queer folks or gay folks or straight folks or whomever who don't maybe believe in either civil or religious marriage as a necessity for their partnership or whatever. And so in addition to it just being tone deaf and the wrong move at the wrong moment, it also is just sort of out of step with, I think, especially a place like San Francisco, where, you know, probably half of the people in San Francisco are in polycules or, you know, thruples or whatever kind of arrangements. And the idea,
I can only imagine a gay person on that board of supervisors making a decision and letting the world know that this is where they stand on it. And the only thing I can think of is that this guy wanted to guarantee that he was not going to be reelected.
Yeah, I truly don't get it. And I'm looking here at this, at his story. Yeah, he's gay. He's HIV positive, in recovery from drug and alcohol addiction. This is on Wikipedia. Born 1964 or 1965. Mysterious. He previously served as the head of communications for the San Francisco Police Department. I truly don't understand this being the moment when you want to do this, Mr. Dorsey. So, yeah, it's just weird. And I'm just curious, like, to go back to his quote, question whether it's worth the money. Are domestic partners just bankrupting San Francisco? I just don't imagine that's true.
Yeah.
In any case, boo on you, Mr. Dorsey.
This next story, Richie, is one that also kind of miffs me, because if I recall correctly, the billionaire behind this company is supposedly one of the good guys that is on our side politically. So I'm a little surprised to read that LinkedIn has quietly rolled back explicit protections for trans people and non-binary users, removing language that once barred misgendering and deadnaming from its hate speech policies. The Microsoft-owned platform, which boasts over 1 billion users, updated. I didn't realize that they had been purchased by Microsoft, but yes. Even still, at that, this company, it seems to me, would not have an awful lot of support from a lot of people in their senior leadership. Anyway, which boasts over 1 billion users, updated its guidelines without public notice. And while LinkedIn says that it still bans harassment based on identity, LGBTQ+ advocates say that the changes send a dangerous message. Quote, yet another social media company choosing to appease anti-LGBTQ+ political ideologues at the expense of user safety, Glad said in a statement. They removed a language that previously named race and gender identity as protected traits. Now the policy only references perceived gender. Well, LinkedIn insists that misgendering still violates its harassment policy, but critics aren't convinced. Quote, targeted misgendering and deadnaming are among the most frequent and insidious forms of anti-trans hate online, according to GLAAD. And the move comes amid a broader rollback of LGBTQ+ protections across the major tech platforms and from the federal government itself.
Yep. So, you know, we saw this with Meta in a big way a little while back, right after, you know, sort of the current administration took office, or maybe right before, right around that time, Meta kind of just red-pilled itself, got rid of all gender bathrooms, changed its terms of service. You know, we're seeing a lot of this. I will say on this particular one, I think that there's an easy answer to this one, which is get rid of LinkedIn. LinkedIn is like, it is a scourge. There's no reason for LinkedIn to exist. I get these. I don't know how to delete my account. It's like, it's sitting out, it's floating out there. But LinkedIn, I get the dumbest emails from LinkedIn where it's like, here's some stories that you might want to read about. And it's like some person who I maybe like was, you know, in a Target next to once talking about crypto or something. Like it is just the dumbest stuff. Like, and I'm sorry, like, you know, the best thing to do is just It is an easy, easy option. You know, some, there are harder platforms to get off of for different reasons. LinkedIn is easy enough. Get the fuck off of LinkedIn. It shouldn't even exist. It's so dumb.
I think a lot of people use it for career growth and for job referral stuff and that kind of thing. But outside of that, yeah.
It's just a bot. LinkedIn bums me out. I just find it a bummer, especially because, you know, again, someone will post something, some thought piece, some like lame thought piece about, it's always about crypto. And then, you know, people who I know from like my past jobs will respond being like, great comment or great article. And I'm like, is it great? Is that great? I don't think it is. You know, talking about how like Dogecoin is still going to be, you know, the new fiat currency of the US in 2 years or something. Like, it's just dumb. Anyway, fuck LinkedIn on this. Microsoft owns it, so they should know better, but I don't know. This one is just, it is one other thing to add to the list, but at the end of the day, I don't know, man. LinkedIn, it's too dumb. I just don't care about LinkedIn. You can't ever make me care about LinkedIn.
Well put.
Although I will say, I just recently managed to find someone who I met at a pool party and was very cute and was not on any of the other social media. And I managed to find him on LinkedIn of all places. So maybe LinkedIn is great. Who knows? That was a triumph of LinkedIn for me. In any case, screw LinkedIn. We want to end on a good note, yeah, a fun note, and a note about a show that I didn't even know was still on. So Laverne Cox made game show history this week, leading Celebrity Family Feud's first ever all trans team during Thursday night's broadcast. The Emmy nominated actress joined forces with entertainer T.S. Madison, writer Jocelyn DeFries, singer Mila Jam, and performer Peppermint to compete against DJ Diplo's team, all while playing for a cause close to home. Quote, "We're going to have some fun, we're going to make some money for charity, and we're going to look good doing it," Cox said from the set. The team competed to benefit the T.S. Madison Starter House, a reentry program in Atlanta supporting Black trans women, especially those impacted by incarceration and sex work. The nonprofit offers housing, wellness care, and business workshops, all designed by and for Black trans women. The episode delivered laughs and representation. Cox wrote, "This was a beautiful moment of chosen family and sisterhood." On Instagram, "We are all we have." That's fun.
Cool. Yeah. You know, I don't watch the show ever, but I have to tell you that there are a tremendous number of snippets from the show that come up on other sites, you know, like on Instagram or I'm sure TikTok and things like that, you know, where they have clips from the show that are invariably hilarious and just show the craziness of people. And it kind of explains how we got to where we are today in a Trumpian world, I think. But it's still out there, and it's still attracting a fairly significant audience, I think. And I think it's great that the show's producers were cool with having an all-trans team on the show.
Totally agree. No, it's really cool. And, you know, if anything, maybe makes a sort of moribund show maybe relevant for a moment. You know, like you said, maybe clips float around. I don't know. What channel is Family Feud on? Is it on a network?
It's a syndicated show, so it's not like on a particular network. So I think it's independently sold to stations, different stations around the country. And it's largely one of those kind of programs that you get, that you fill one of those early evening, post evening news before you go to network programming time slots, you know, like 7 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. But yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, like, it's very cool. Laverne Cox is amazing. And I love that this happened in this moment again, where we're seeing trans erasure everywhere, even, you know, on major platforms like LinkedIn. So yeah, just to see this is a good moment, and it's fun. It's a fun, light way to end our show on Newsday Tuesday. And
I have a couple other announcements to make.
Let's hear them.
Okay. Well, first of all, in the last week, I had two very unfortunate things that happened. Right after our program last Tuesday, I proceeded to have a little boo-boo outside of my office, and I now have staples in the back of my skull after I look like a scene from a horror flick, actually, in the moments following it, because I had blood all over my neck and my face and everywhere. And so I'm recovering fine from that, and that's good. But then in follow-up to that, within the last 24 hours, I also had a minor cardiac event, which didn't feel so minor at the moment, but was racing heart for several minutes. And so I have been asked by my physicians to take a little break from some of the stuff that I've been up to, because I've had a lot of stuff on my plate this summer already. And we're still getting situated into our new facilities and all that stuff. So we're going to take a few weeks off at least. Hopefully we'll be back sooner than later, but I need to just take a break. And I'm still going to be coming in and working, but doing it a little less intensively. And part of that is that we're going to put this show on a brief hiatus. We will return. We're in the midst of actually launching the Mutual Queer News Network. And so this, of course, is a huge part of that, part of our operation. So we're not running away or anything, but we are going to be gone for a few weeks, and I appreciate your being there and coming back with us as we do that. By the way, there is new social media accounts out there for Mutual QNN, and we will, of course, keep up the Richie and John website and the social media avenues that we have used for the show, so you can stay in touch and know what's going on there. So I appreciate that, and I'm looking forward to being back here with you very soon, Richie. I'm sure that there will be a lot of things that happen between now and then that will make us wish that we were back here talking about them each week. In the meantime, we'll just have to pick up the phone and call our therapists.
Exactly. And John, you know, of course, health and wellness always are paramount. And that's for everyone also who's listening to the show, because, you know, whether it is for, you know, physical reasons, emotional reasons, otherwise, sometimes stepping back from the maelstrom that is this world we're in right now is a thing that is good to do for mental health, for physical health, for other reasons. And it's okay to do it. Because, you know, again, we are only in a few months into an administration. We're going to have to be here for the long haul. So if you need to take a week, a month, whatever, change your media diet, get some sleep differently, drink some electrolytes, whatever it takes, we're here. We will be back with you. But in the meantime, stay, you know, sort of stay strong, stay involved, and we will be back with you sooner rather than later.
And feel free to stay in touch with us. Of course, our email always works. It's info@richieandjohn.com. You can also leave us voicemail at our business office number, which is area code 760-833-5000, 760-833-5000, or info@richieandjohn.com. Thanks so much for being here, and we hope that you enjoyed this week's recap of the news, and we'll be looking forward to our next one.
Talk to you soon.
Richie and John is a production of the United America Network, a division of the Mutual Broadcasting System. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests. If you have a problem with it, bugger off.
Freedom and equality, let it be clear. Being who you are, a fun, frisky, and out loud queer. From Mutual Broadcasting, we're breaking free. Living our truth, just you listen and see. Oh.
truth, just you listen and see.